finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beelzebub, All Souls Podcast. We're back. There was the U.S. holiday. There was the finale, which we'll talk about. We've got some data slates. I'm joined by Red Powell.
Hello.
Tanya Gates and Adam Camilleri.
Hey, everybody.
G'day.
Welcome back to the show. Hope y'all are having some great times, some chill times as we get towards the end of the year. We're going to try to get shows out each and every week. Well, because, look, we got stuff to talk about. There is, like, apparently there is going to be a new data slate every single day for the basically leading up to the end of December.
I love this. G-Dub announced they were going to be like, we're going a bit quiet for the next, like, 4 months. And everyone's all like, oh, man, so it's so neglected. Oh, my brain's exploding. And then they're just like, detachments.
That is great.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about, at the time of this recording, we've seen a few detachments, and I definitely want to discuss some of them in detail and some of them in concept. And then on the back half of the show, we'll talk about the finale and grand narrative recap that we, both participated in, experienced, or viewed online. But let's talk about these detachments. I wonder if some people realize they don't have to play with them if they don't want to.
So I heard a little rumors about this possibly coming. And the first rumor I heard was that armies that don't have a codex will be getting something at Christmas. That's all pretty much I heard. Turns out that G-Dub was like, nah, it's everybody. Everybody, top, bottom, doesn't matter. You're getting something. I assume it's a reaction to people who only have one detachment being like, well, now I have two detachments, but I don't like the one you gave me for free online. I didn't have to pay for.
I don't necessarily want to like dunk on folks that are like wanting something and really do want, and I get it. You want it, you want something, or you want it to be better enough to where you want to play. Like you want it to be different or come over the top of whatever it is you've currently got, or do you want another viable option. And I can conceptualize and empathize with all that. But for the ones that do have the other detachment or even a single detachment, if this one isn't quote unquote better than that one, like you're not really worse off. You just don't have to use that one if you prefer the other one. That's kind of where I've seen comment. And look, people are going to say what they want to say, and I think they should. I think those voicing your opinion like that constructively is a way to let the folks know that are doing that you can make them what you want. And I think that like the Death Guard one, of course, I looked at it and I was like, is that detachment rule worth giving up the original detachment rule? And you can make an argument that it's incredibly, situational.
I thought that was a good one. I thought it was a good dilemma as you're describing, right? Between some of the better or other well-known Death Guard detachments than that one. 5-inch scout, -1 to hit at range. It's good.
I'm one of those players that go into vapor lock. Like, oh no, this decision is exactly the right thing for one way and not the other. What's more broad? Neither one of those more. I go into those if then failure loops sometimes. Is it really better or which one should I choose? And in this case, I do think it's like almost, it could be potentially a coin flip, but patient situationally. But I think where some of the contention may have come from is that I think the current detachment is more reliable, but that's a subjective judgment call. And I don't think it should interrupt the fact that we got this other detachment to play with, like you were saying, for free, and it's something new. And I could, when I'm playing this game for fun, I could use some different rules and maybe some different units that benefit from this detachment rule when I'm playing my one-off game against my buddy. They don't have to be tournament winners, I guess is what I'm saying.
I mean, sorry, Tanya.
I was just going to say, like, as somebody who quite often just, like, plays a thematic list that has, like, no consideration over what the meta is, I don't know, maybe just challenge yourself to try it first before you knock it.
Well, so the other thing to take into consideration is all the existing detachments have been balanced, have been tweaked, have been adapted over, especially their index detachments, over, a year. So them releasing brand new things into the fold. A lot of people who I know have been comparing the Death Guard, the new Death Guard one, to what they have now. And you got to realize the Death Guard detachment that they have in their index now is almost 1.5 detachments because of all the buffs and tweaks that they've had. And so comparing on a 1-for-1 basis to something that has has been, you know, enhanced and adapted and made fit for purpose over 12 months compared to something very fresh, it's not always going to be fair. You got to take it on face value rather than comparing it to what you have all the time. Because Death Guard 1 is the perfect example. You get your army, you get your detachment rule, and then you get all the negatives. I can choose to be negative weapons, complex skill. I can choose to have the negative armor save or, you know, whatnot. And so that's what I mean by it's like 1.5 detachments in that one because it's just been such extensively reworked. And you can almost say the same for like, you know, Skitarii Splinter Cohort and Sky Splinter, sorry, and a couple of the other ones. Like, hell, the Vanguard from Tyranids, which has gone through extensive reworks, comparing that to just something that just comes out fresh. Why it might on face value be like, oh, this isn't as good as what I got. If it's a fresh, interesting way to play, you know, not saying you need to, you know, go home and rewrite your tournament list, but if it just gives you a little bit of spice, a little bit of excitement into your faction, you know, what's the harm?
Scouting Death Guard and the idea of like a huge cloud of flies giving them,
I love
you know, stealth is very themey. And I do think that what I was reading as an observer, and of course I want everything to be cool, like especially for the armies I play. Yes, I want an instant, you know, winner. Or I don't mean to instantly win the game. I want to, you know, something to zinger, something real spicy or whatever. But it's not getting in the way of the anticipation for seeing what comes next. Like every day, I think it's going to be fun to see what gets kind of cooked up and served up for us that just happens to appear on our feed, daily for the next couple of weeks or so.
Oh, I think it's exciting. I think it's absolutely exciting. None of my detachments the Dark Angels detachment dropped. And I'm really keen on that one. See, I'm already of the opinion that that one is probably, you know, maybe 15% or 20% less good than the perfectly optimized Gladius Dark Angels list, but it's much more like how I want to play Dark Angels. So it doesn't matter that it's 15 or 20% less. I'm going to get more enjoyment from playing that one than the absolute epitome of toughness because I play Dark Angels because they've got Raven Wing and Death Wing and stuff. No one plays Dark Angels for the Green Wing, all right? It's just you can play Ultramarines. So if you want to get that stuff, you go play Ultramarines, all right?
See you later. So 1993.
Yeah, exactly right. Bring back the Goblin Green bases. But that detachment functions how I want Dark Angels to do, where Dark Angels Deathwing and Ravenwing like almost interlock to give each other buffs and work together. And that sounds perfectly thematic to me and exactly how I want them to play. So I'm all aboard.
Yeah, I'm not really complaining, you know, about even the people that are disappointed because I just think it's like you want, you know, to get something that you want. But unfortunately, that's not exactly how this game works. It's that combination of unit choices and detachments and whatever. What I think this is doing is doing that, like giving a different way. Like when I build, let's say I want to build for that Death Guard detachment, I'm going to use units in my collection that I probably don't have as optimized for the index detachment. So is that bad to mix it up? You know, play some games and find out.
It's never bad to play the game. Period.
Exactly. And I don't think everyone's lost sight of that. It just seems like there's some very vocal minority of folks who have potentially lost sight of that. And that is, it's just an interesting take on that. Now, of course, you know, wait till we get to the, you know, the Blood Angel detachment. I'm like, that's not how I would have done it. You know, who knows, right? But we all turn into armchair game designers.
Mm. What's more than that, I think this just demonstrates a fundamental step forward by Games Workshop where they're willing to give us like detachments for free online. It shows moving towards, you know, the year of our Lord 2025 when, you know, we're all technology driven and stuff like that. And just giving away, you know, detachment to every single army for free around Christmas just seems lovely.
It's super fun. Like the advent calendar is a super incredibly fun, amazingly cool, generous thing. These things don't necessarily just magic themselves into existence. Somebody had to make this for us, you know, and it's cool to see this kind of like little what's behind the door, what's going to be in the box. It's neat to do that. And I can't wait. I'm actually looking forward to every day just to see what comes through and the players that are playing out there that want to use them. I encourage you to do it. Like maybe you will find a different fun way to play the game. It's not a, we focus sometimes about match play wins and things like that, but there is a huge number of people out there that are playing for a different experience. And I think this is an incredibly nice thing for them to get.
Well, did somebody on this podcast play in a certain narrative grand may it have been?
It was quite grand, I'll say that. It was the grand narrative was still, this is my third time attending, and it was the best narrative event I have attended to date. All things considered, had such an amazing time.
Do you consider that building on strength on strength on strength? Like it's just gotten better?
Yes,
like
100%.
Like a little bit more depth, a little bit more character and engagement. I mean, a little bit more weaving of everything together. I mean, not to characterize it for you, but do you see it ramping? Like, do you see it on this trajectory?
You know, if there was like a Rocky montage that like led up to the grand narrative and then was playing like some of the key events afterwards and whatnot. I mean, like the first time being where it was set at that like resort location in Albuquerque was pretty amazing. And then the level of how the GW team showed up in that first one with everything they brought in, the warlords and their full cosplay and everything, just kind of really like took the crowd aback, like put it, it set this pace up front. And that first grand narrative ended with a Titan walk and this big battlefield. It's the exact same battlefield that's normally used to show the Istvan 5 massacre of the Emperor's Children versus the Iron Hands, like with Fulgrim and Ferris Manus in the
world
middle.
Eaters,
like,
and
all the other, you know, the traitor chapters around what would eventually become the Shattered Legions. And so they took that board and it became this massacre where there was a Reaver Titan, there was like 12 Warhounds, and this massive thing went down. It's just such a crazy end to the first narrative. And then the second narrative, they really stepped up some of the narrative elements with the warlords, where the warlords like really grew into their own thing. And that time it wasn't just, you know, Imperium versus Chaos. They had took like a more conceptual, driven factional purpose approach to it. You know, were you for order or destruction or, the interloper approach. And then this time they went back to the more Imperial Chaos and Xenos deal. But this time, I mean, you know, if you haven't seen some of the pictures from the Warhammer community, the warlords were amazing. We had a big mech and the character was fully decked out. I mean, it was like orc true scale and how they approached it. Just this massive like orc figure and everything. And the way that they, the missions and how they stepped up, I mean, even, you know, some good things that I took away for even some of my own narrative events that I'm looking at doing, they like provided a straight up packet that had all the narrative stuff built into it. And so like you showed up and they gave you, you know, here's some crusade traits that you could use if you were going to level up and whatnot and go off of that. And then the missions that they had were, I thought they were difficult in certain ways. It wasn't just like it wasn't this thing where it was like, oh, well, it's a narrative thing, so you can't take the mission serious to whatever extent. Some of it was tough and in its own narrative way. And the way that they played it reminded me of some of these different open war missions and some of older scale missions that we played before. One of them, the deployment was set where there were no deployment zones. You set your unit down and then effectively your opponent then set a unit down and they could put it as close as they wanted, really, up to 3 inches away. If they put it within 6 inches, they had to take D6 mortals, or it was within 9 inches. But if they were outside of 9 inches, then, you know, that was it. And so like you had to deploy, you essentially built out your own deployment zone, but then you started essentially in many cases 9 inches away from your opponent or closer if they took, or you took the mortal wounds. And so it made for a really interesting thing. It was right. And like there's another one where the attackers started on the corners and then the defender was in a big lane in the middle as if it was an ambush piece, and like kind of how it collapsed from there. And so there's really great stuff again, like, and it was, the event has definitely continued to grow in attendance, and the, amount of effort that has gone into it by the GW team was really apparent, and kind of the show that they wanted to put on this time. In difference to previous times, there were always these faction objectives and you were trying to accomplish things on their behalf. This time though, they had like physical things that were being done. Like for the Imperiums, we were unlocking a chest. for the Xenos interlopers. We were trying to fix this orc device that they were doing, and then the Chaos were trying to unlock this Chaos artifact. And so the progress that was being made played into how it was going. And there was also
let me jump in here for a second. Ahead. This is not a conceptual artifact. This is an actual physical representation of these devices that were larger than life scale things that you could interact with. This isn't like, so this, the Chaos device was a, and I believe there are pictures up on the Warhammer community.
There were
these things, and you actually got physical devices that got inserted into these things to open up, you know, unlock these objectives, gates, key things, and whatever.
That's right.
But it was, but it wasn't just like you flip open a piece of paper and you do this thing. Like, no, you are, someone is actually doing this thing in a physical device you could see, touch, smell, hear.
That's right.
You know, that kind
that's
of
right.
Stuff.
They would call up different players from the narrative. So it was people participating in the event would get recognized and called up, and then they would give them. So it was keys to unlock the locks for the Imperium piece. It was power cells for the Xenos artifact. And then it was ritual Chaos blades that went into these skulls for the Chaos team. And, you know, the people got called up and got to participate, and that they got to unlock one of the things or whatever. And it was really awesome. And the depiction and engagement that they had with the crowd. And there was a whole thing where, like, the Imperium, because I was part of the Imperium, we didn't do that well on the first day. And so, like, the Warlord, like, you know, got on everybody's case about, you know, not doing well enough and needed to fight harder and everything, and tried to rally the Imperials, and we got better. And, you know, it all played into the story. It was a lot of fun. There was a, different from previous years, there was kill team that went on side by side. So in every room, there were 9 people per battle group playing 40K. And then there was one, so 10 people total per team. One person was playing special ops kill team stuff that also factored into it. And then there was some other things going on at Warhammer Worlds, and they had like a grand narrative satellite case thing going on that all played into it. The scale was pretty amazing. And you can tell, like, the event's only going to continue to grow and develop. Mm. And so really exciting, really, really, really exciting. I got to say, my team, I had a large group of people that played. We were in 3 different battle groups. We had an Imperium battle group, a Chaos battle group, and a Xenos battle group. And if it says anything, my Imperium battle group, we ended up as a team, won an award, if you want to call it that. We won the Firehawks Award, which is like the worst battle group out of all 40. We were number 40.
Because the Firehawks chapter is that was a.
That's right. That's right. Because, yeah, you know, in the war, the Firehawks chapter essentially just burnt out and died, and that's apparently that's exactly what we did. I'm pretty excited for our team for that.
I don't want to share it. I will share it in a.
All right. Well, I guess we'll leave everybody hanging on that.
When we're in person, anyone listening can come up and just say, you know, hey, what's up? Remember, what's going on with those Firehawks? You know,
sounds great.
You should tell the people in the Patreon Discord.
That's what we'll do.
There you go. But so I did that, and then you know, we were, my battle group was, whether you want to call it proud or not, to have received that award. We were happy for that. And then the other award, and you know, I share this with my boys, my 2 older boys, but I'd like to say that we won what was called the Armor of Contempt Award, which was Best Cosplay, which I was really excited. I didn't expect it. I didn't go into this competing for something like that. There's a thing, and I think that people get it, right? Like, because there's this whole immersion aspect. And so there's like a whole code word to be used to go out of character during the grand narrative, where you're like, hey, Vermilion. And that's where you step out, you go out of character. And then you can, you know, whatever, invoke Vermilion again to step back into character. Anyways, so there's a lot of people that are participating in this narrative that really just want it to be a good experience for everybody. And I like to say that was how I tried to approach with my own cosplay and what I was trying to do, where I wanted my cosplay to be something that contributed to the greater atmosphere and the community as a whole. Like, I wanted this witch hunter inquisitor cosplay, and it was thematic, and I tried to make it like match my army, so like it all kind of came together. And
it was complete too. I mean, like, looked real well put together.
Thank you. And again, I tried. That's kind of part of what I was going for between the army and my cosplay. There's this completeness to it, and that I tried to have pieces to every single aspect of it, from my boots to my gloves to the face mask to the hat. And my boys had their own little outfits that their cosplay that they had worked together, kind of inquisitorial acolytes and everything, and they'd painted up their own prop weapons and everything, and there's a few of my friends helped contribute to it and put parts together. And, I was asking y'all's opinion as I was developing it, kind of seeing how it all went. And so I appreciate all that, because clearly, again, all the assistance and support that I received along the way, I was fortunate enough to be recognized to have the best cosplay. And I saw some amazing stuff that people had there that,
there was a Bellicor cosplay.
There was a Bellicor cosplay. I mean, there was some amazing stuff there. And so to be recognized for that was a real honor amongst the community. So it was really cool.
Well deserved. And the effort you put in was incredibly noticeable. But, and to be recognized is even better. But you're right. There was a lot of amazing stuff. A lot of people are getting it. I saw more people in character, in costume, the entire time than I had in previous years, at least that I recognize. Yeah. I remember seeing in previous years.
For sure.
That's pretty neat. My family came down and I got to lead them around to see all the narrative stuff. And it was very cool to see, for them to see also all the people in costume and everything, so they can, have, basically my youngest have something to aspire to when he's coming to play in these things, which he got real jazzed by seeing everybody doing their thing, which was
awesome.
Very cool. So what faction ended up winning this time?
So they do a really good, again, like the, I think there's something to the grim dark of 40K that like nobody ever wins to whatever extent. But there do happen to be people that do maybe better than others to certain regards. And so, in the first year, it was really hard to say that anybody won anything. Cause like after that Titan walk, like everything got decimated and all the stuff blew up and there were no more Imperial Titans, but there wasn't any more chaos after that. I feel like the Interlopers kind of got away with it and like sailed off into the stars. The second time the Interlopers kind of did the same thing, but they didn't really accomplish a lot, but at the same time, chaos really like ran amok and got this massive like planet sized AI and went away with that, and Vastor was invoked and all sorts of stuff. Imperials executed their Inquisitor, which I guess like they solved their problem of having a possible traitor or whatever, and they seemed to be okay with that. So like, it is what it is. And this third one, it was this really, again, like as GW has continued to evolve the narrative, the epic of like how the three warlords played into it. The Chaos Warlord got the Chaos Sword, and they had like this boss fight thing with the kill team, which was really cool, that played out before the final episode. And it was all
where the warlords themselves had miniatures that were represented on the table, right, and everything as well.
They did. And they were like, so they like used like the co-op rules for kill team that have recently been introduced. And then the warlords were like these like, impossible bosses. And so it was just this like throwing the kitchen sink of every faction in kill team kind of rules at these war bosses. So the Big Mech was there, the Rogue Trader was there, the Word Bearer, all those warlords were present, and kind of how they threw down. So at the very end, Glitcha had this whole kill sphere, and he was there to do something, because again, this is playing around the similar part of what's in Kill Team with Vulcus and the big gun on the planet, right? So in the Cassandra system, which is
I love it that you're throwing these out. Like, we know what they are. Like, we lived it for the weekend. No, you lived it for the weekend.
Well, but you take the Kill Team set and like, the Aquilans versus the Tau, the Vespid, like they're fighting over the same big gun that was in the narrative, right? And so like, people kind of reference it. If you look at the box art, there's a massive gun and so on.
I get it. So, tied in the actual Hive Storm.
So they did.
Narrative for that. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. So all that played into it. And so the Big Mech was there for the gun, or at least everybody thought that. And then it ended up that he had this cunning plan where he actually wanted them to try and shoot the gun at his kill sphere so he could catch the bullet. This massive, like, huge bullet, because he wanted to add it to his collection as this Big Mech, and then he was going to go off and do whatever with it. Right? Like that plays is perfect story, right? Orc story.
It's important to mention, I think, just functionally, like this weekend, this storyline is not necessarily linear. It reacts to what the players do throughout the course of the battles and each engagement and the weekend and the different factions. So it is reactive and interactive with the players. This isn't like where you sign up and it's predetermined what happens, you know, at the end, like every note is hit perfectly. That's not what it is. Right. Like the players are actually participating with the story the whole weekend and decide the outcome.
Like I said, the Imperials weren't doing so hot after day one. And so our missions in day two reflected that. The chaos at some point during the weekend. So part of like the process and the ritual of unlocking the chaos demon blade or whatever that the word bearer was trying to unlock, trying to please all the gods in a different way along the route. And somewhere in there, they like messed up and didn't please Nurgle well enough. And so they had to go back and like recommit themselves to it. And there's a whole aspect of them trying to do that.
That sounds gross.
Yep.
And they all walked away with the con crud.
Yep, exactly. And so it was cool. The Chaos Warlord got the weapon, but then he, I won't say he fled necessarily, but he definitely left. He didn't like take much with him. He was going off to go try and find the people from what was happening over across the ocean at Warhammer Worlds. And so he went off to go try and deal with that because they didn't get any of their reinforcements or whatever they were supposed to get from that. Glitcha, the big mech, thought he was going to catch this bullet, but then the rogue trader decided that she was going to valiantly sacrifice herself to crash her ship into his void shields to try and break the void shields so the bullet would actually hit the kill sphere. And she ended up being successful. And so there's a whole thing to that. But what came to be, right, and like you kind of figure it out from seeing some of the stuff, but what was in the chest that we unlocked for the Imperials was a Necron Tesseract cube thing. And she ends up using, I'm not saying she used it. It was very obscure in that the same time that the ship blew up against Glitch's void shield, there was a bright green flash. And whatever that means, probably, you know, you just take it as it goes. And so Glitcha was a little, I say a little, he had quite a monologue about how he had this great plan and then the bullet hit the kill sphere. And so he had to retreat with the kill sphere because it was needed repairs and he wasn't going to be able to. I mean, everybody thought the kill sphere was going to crash into the planet. And then it ended up being turned away because of the valiant sacrifice of the rogue trader and the fact that we shot a planet sized gun at it. So go figure. How much more 40K could that story have been?
Super Warhammer. Yeah. I'm down.
It was awesome.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll chat more about this and also the competitive side for the World Champs of Warhammer 40,000. See what won that. It may surprise you if you haven't heard it already. We'll talk about that just a little bit. We'll see you on a second, everybody.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. This is the second part of the show. Please check out our sponsors. They keep this show running and running smooth. If you are so inclined, maybe hit us up on Patreon as well. Every tier is awesome. The competitive side of things, on the World Championship of Warhammer, 34 countries competed this year, I think, in 40K.
Yeah, good enough.
30 plus countries competed this year in 40K. And Custodes took it down.
Yeah, very, very surprising. It was seriously the Cinderella story. For those who do not know, a gentleman named Folger Piles, an absolutely wild name for a wild guy who managed to go the entire distance. And he was well and truly up against it. We casted, I think, three of his games.
Ended up, yeah, three. Yeah,
three of his games. And yeah, the dude is a maestro of managing distance. But more than that, finding the path to victory. Because there was many times I thought he was absolutely out of it. Played against Blood Angels twice, the same player, one of the best players from Spain. Played against the guy twice in the group stage because he had to play him in the shadow round as well. And I've my opinion now has been shot in, you know, behind the shed, because I've been on the opinion that Blood Angels is like, especially the Sanguinary Guard based Blood Angels, like a Sanguinary Guard to me just feels like a custody. It's a custody that moves 12.
Yeah,
it's about the same in long. Yeah, a couple less toughness, but yeah, it moves faster, advances and charges a lot more often. Armor Contempt, you know, makes up for a lot of the downfalls of the defensive disparity. And so yeah, I'm just like, oh, Blood Angels is a better version of Custodes in a lot of ways. And Folger was like, hold up, Adam, wait a second. But so playing against that Blood Angels player twice, the first game that they played, which is on stream, was wild. So literally it came down to in turn five, the Custodes player was going second. The Blood Angels player had to not draw more than 5 points on secondaries. So, of course, you get three looks at cards because you can one CP cycle. And so essentially, the three cards at the top of the deck could not score him more than 5 points. If he scored 6 points, there was nothing Folger could do, the Custodes player, to win that game. He would lose by one no matter what card he scored, because they were both pretty much guaranteed to get their 15s on primary. And so they worked it out. I sat here and worked it out. And Folger literally went through what he had left in his deck, and he figured out what he'd scored, what he hadn't scored.
He had the app to see what he had received and what was potentially left to draw.
Yeah, work back from there. What is still in my deck? What have I scored or discarded? What is still an opportunity? And he realized he needs to draw a 5-point secondary. His opponent scored 4 points on the secondaries. And so he has to pull exactly a 5-point secondary and exactly containment off the top three cards. And he did, and he drew the game. So that was to draw the game. That wasn't him to win the game. That was to draw the game. And that's the reason I had to play again in the shadow round. And
the open bracket, or the bracket was they play in pods, and the champion of each pod would go on to the top 16. There were 8 pods. The champions of each bracket would go over to the top 16. And where the shadow round comes in is if it was not definitive who the top players were, then the ones in contention, not solidified as a top player, had to play another game in a round that was outside of the brackets of tournament pod play.
And so the Custodes player accomplished that on the bottom of turn 5 with like 5 models left in his army. He then has to butter up versus about 1,200 points of Blood Angels. Like, very little death killing occurred for the Blood Angels. They play again in the Shadow Round. And I went down and watched this. Paul and I had a delicious dinner. I think that was the day we had the burger. And we went down and we watched a bit of the Shadow Round. And this gentleman is going second again versus the Blood Angels player. Has less models, less than 5 models. His opponent has more models. 1,500 points of his army left. And Folger wins by like 2 or 3 points at the bottom of turn 5. And I was just like, okay, this guy can't be stopped. The hand of destiny has been placed upon his shoulders. He's going all the way. He proceeds to make it to the final round versus Astra Militarum, which I think is possibly the worst matchup for Adeptus Custodes, because you pretty much just have to walk at big guns. And the Custodes player goes through it, figures out, he's just like, he goes second again. He's like, okay, the only way I can win this is to literally throw everything at you. Expose every single asset, everything gets thrown against the wall. And his opponent, John Lennon, does a masterful movement phase of corralling and controlling what can accomplish.
You know, make it only where he can't get around screening.
Yeah. Some people might deride or, you know, say it's a negative on the part of the Custodes player that they just threw it all out there and managed to win the game because they activated all their 4+, feel no pains, and all their defensive stratagems and stuff like that. I see that as a testament to the knowledge of the gameplay and the position you were put in, where you look at the entire battlefield, you run through, you know, like that meme where all the maths equations go past your head and you figure out like the one chance you have, you know, Doctor Strange style, the one out that you have, and you perfectly play to it. And he did. And it resulted in him winning. It's a brilliant story.
It takes a lot of courage to throw your models out there like that against a gun line and also against an accomplished player. Like, you know, it's like he knows how to target priority. You can assume that your opponent in the championship of the world championships knows how to target priority.
Knows what they're doing. Also, got to raise a glass to the runner-up, John Lennon, because the poor gentleman has come right 3 years in a row. People may say 2 years in a row, but the one that happened in Albuquerque in New Mexico, he also was the runner-up there. So that shows something special in and of itself. Probably sucked a lot. In fact, I know it did because we tried to interview afterwards and he was a little torn up about it. But coming that close to getting your name on the plaque to get your name on the hammer of the emperor at the end, and falling short 3 years in a row. That's takes a bit of intestinal fortitude. So massive props to him too.
But yeah, you're exactly right. Like the consistency of making it there through, you know, all the different editions, the different, you know, data slates, like insert all the variables, and then the skill level, of course, having to play through that consistency of making it to that position is very admirable. And like, no one's done it in the last 3 years other than him. Well, he's been, mm-hmm. there's been a different yep. partner in each one of those dances every year. So, you know, I think you're exactly right to highlight that, and what a job. The fact that, you know, we talk about the meta as this living, breathing ecosystem and all the various balanced data slates and everything else that we've had, that it, the games are almost like an any given Sunday situation. Like if you're good at the game, know your faction, you have a good shot of winning whatever game that you play.
Yeah, agreed. We've kind of entered the most, well, I was going to say the calmest waters we've had, but then G-Dub, like I did before, was like, detachment! We will see what happens there. And of course, at this time of year somewhere, sometime probably next 2 months, we're going to get points changes and a balanced starter slate. So I'll see what that does to the game. But if we're tracking towards, you know, a beautiful state of the game, and like you said, yeah, any given day, if you know your faction really well, you can do really well.
And seeing this, you know, it comes down to the fundamentals of the game. And then in this case, also knowing where your outs are, doing the analysis of your turns, that really seemed to help Folger. And because to focus on, you know, maybe he was ruling out, maybe he didn't know exactly what to do, but he was ruling out all the things he shouldn't do, or things he could work towards, make sure he was in the right position to capitalize on that. And I'll even go so far as to say, you know, we see some plays sometimes where players won't get up and be on an objective because they know their opponent might flip storm hostile objective, you know,
yep.
something like that. You know, those are the types of things that awareness and being comfortable making those decisions helps you win a slightly, you know, a little bit more of a percentage, and you start to add up all those things, and then sooner or later you're world champion or whatever.
Happens every day.
That's all, folks. That's all it is.
It did happen, and we saw some of those like fundamentals of. Well, I mean, look, we get questions somewhat frequently, and I'm so oversimplifying, but like, how do I get better at this game? What should I be doing right now? What should I be thinking about? And you can look at some of these champions and how they approach the game and start to incorporate some of their playbook into yours. And I think the takeaway from this one is there was basically a clinic on really evaluating what your secondary flips might be, and, you know, looking at it on a turn by turn basis to kind of run through some, you know, plays in your head about what are you playing towards. You're not, you know, blindly stabbing into the dark. You are actually being somewhat deliberate with maybe some of your movements and or positioning, and, you know, that contributed to winning the day or the weekend, the case may be. You know, and this tournament was a tournament of people that have won their place here. They had to win in their region, their local area, to get the opportunity to come and play in this environment. So everybody there was a champion. It's an incredibly tough field.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different metrics that we measure the strength of a field on. There is a couple that are kind of irregular. Like the one that this was measured on, or the numbers that were being thrown around, was there's a metric called ELO, which is the metric established for the rating of chess players. So if you are
NASCAR.
Whatever, it could be that too. I don't know. but apparently this was the highest ELO event, one of the highest ELO events of all time, as in had the most champions, the most highest rated players of all time. So they're definitely something to hang their hat on. Winning or even doing well, having a winning record at that event would be something to be proud of.
Hearing some of the players that, like, man, like I've lost two games this tournament. Like, it's unheard of for them. You know, I mean, they weren't saying it that way. Like, oh my God, I never lose. But they were like, this is a tough field. Well, I've lost a couple of games. These are, you know, top ranked players.
I know a gentleman from Tanya's neck of the woods who can't not like top three every event he goes to, and I believe he went 4-4 I believe you went straight down the middle of this one. And that just shows you, like, it could be that your guy, your hometown hopeful, is, you know, the absolute juggernaut of your area, and then steps into the big pond to see what they're made of. And year by year, a lot of people will develop. A lot of people will go to this event for the first time and be like, okay, so that's the caliber I need to reach, and start getting better and better and better. It's exciting.
Red, did you have the Galaxy Smash Burger while you were there?
I shared it, as I would hope that, you know, no one person ate that thing by themselves. I shared it with three other people, and we were full. It was an amazing feat. It's massive, man. It's like, I mean, I know, what was it, only two burgers, but like for a Smash Burger, I mean, it was like 6 inches tall.
It wasn't as smash as I probably would have liked it, but it was specially designed for the hotel, or the hotel
was awesome.
put it together for an event only, and it was supposed to be kind of Bullet Angel themed. It had a buffalo aioli with two smash patties on red onions, some pickles, and blue cheese. I could tell you, and you know, on a golden bun. So you got the gold, the red, the blue. You got everything from Bullet Angels in there, and it tasted pretty good.
It was good.
But yeah, I think Adam and I took one down by ourselves.
We totally did. We annihilated them. Mind you, we like the distance between meals for the stream team can be quite expensive.
Sure.
So I think we ate those at like 9:30 at night, having not eaten since lunch. So we were down to smash the smash burgers.
I'm not complaining at all, but like, you know, like if we miss the lunch window, and then if the players happen to be running long, and then the next round's going to start, it's like, you're just,
it is what it is.
If you're ever coming by the stream team, this is the only plea I'll make. If you have an extra granola bar on you, you know, just throw it. Whiz it.
At my head, just at my freaking head. Just peg me with your snacks.
If you're ever thinking, would they like some chips right now? Yeah.
Yeah.
We probably would, because wait, look, we're there for the action, and want to bring the content to the folks. And chat was great, actually, this time as well. It was really nice seeing all the people interact with the games and be there to see what was happening with the games.
All right, take a pause.
Yep.
Just for editing. Can you edit this?
No. What are you trying to do?
Never mind. I was going to launch into a tirade against people in the stream who are pondering why we don't mic players.
Oh, that should be fairly obvious, right? I mean, it's like...
But it doesn't seem to be obvious, because everyone keeps asking why we don't mic the players on a publicly traded, you know, billion-dollar company's
I would
Twitch.
Like to take a guess. I think it's because potty mouths. That's what I think.
Well, potty mouths... Right, like legitimately, a single racial slur could knock 10% off the company or something like that, if it went the wrong way. And that's just not a risk, like,
sure,
that a billion-dollar publicly traded company can take.
You would think that that kind of stuff, like, I go back to the sort of thing we're talking about at the very beginning. It's like, I get it that people may want things, but sometimes there's reasons
you
don't have what you want, I guess.
I mean, I'm not against it. I mean, we have in the past had the players' mics piped directly to Paul, who, you know, bounces them off of me. But it's like a level of technical that doesn't always work out, unfortunately. But yeah, that's the reason we don't mic the players, because it's just an unnecessary risk for such a large company that is so visual and public.
Well, if anybody was curious, you know, again, there's like, we take any kind of feedback that would get, but overall the player, the people watching the stream were very pleasant, and like a lot, you could tell a lot of them actually watched the whole way, or at least come in and checked out, you know.
Yeah, it was amazing
when they, over the course of the weekend, and it was really nice to see that interaction. And then we got to focus on some great games on both the Age of Sigmar and the Warhammer 40,000 side, and they really were good games, which is nice.
How did you feel about the Sigmar games? And what ended up winning the Sigma competitive?
Wasn't the Cruel Boys. The Cruel Boys lost to...
Went down. So was it OBR?
Yeah, OCR Boomers, I think, took it down. Yep. That happened on another stream. I wasn't not watching that game. That happened. The championship game, I think, happened on the.
We had to spread it out for the love of the other streamers there, because of course this was a big stream crew. We had French, Spanish, Kill Team. We had various different. It was awesome to see this happen. Very different communities and streaming communities coming together to put on the biggest show that we could. But we focused in on the 40K for the last stream and gave it our full attention. But it was, dude, spectacular. Also, I wanted to say the level of hobby from last year to this year. Ooh, not saying last year was bad, but this year was definitely.
The champion side, like on the competitive side?
Yeah, in the competitive side, the hobby level was spectacular. Incredible stuff. Because of course, I believe that they're giving out more golden tickets to best overalls. If not, this may be more with beautifully painted armies won events.
So I think these tickets are awarded through independent organizers, and I believe the independent organizers get to decide what is their highest criteria or highest level of award and award the slots based on that.
That's right.
I think. Don't ask me.
That's correct. I mean, unless it's like a GW specific event, like one of the US Opens or whatever, right?
Sorry, we are incorrect. It was Stormcast Eternals that won over the Aussie Arc Bone Reapers in the final. We were thinking about the quarterfinals there.
That's right. What's his name from Denmark won?
Yeah, Casper.
Casper, right? Yeah.
Casper won over Jesper.
Yeah,
gotta love it.
To the golden tickets piece, you're right, Paul. When it comes to the independent events that are given golden tickets to distribute by GW for being sanctioned events or whatever you want to call it in that regard, it is on those TOs, really, on how they award those tickets. It is not like there's no specific, hey, you've got to give it to the best general or whatever you want to call it. It is completely up to the independent TO and how they award those golden tickets for their events that ultimately, there is an application process, right, to receive a golden ticket. And I know that gets vetted by the events team and everything, and they go through it and look at it and determine if it is an event that meets a relatively appropriate criteria, and then they hand out those golden tickets. It comes down to the TOs and how they go about it. And I think that, again, as the World Championship has continued to progress, just like the Grand Narrative, that the quality has built up, the expectations at a community level, a community standard, has continued to increase.
I love seeing it.
I was definitely like stunned by the hobby level when they had the showcase out. I was just walking around. I was like, damn, some of this stuff is good. I would have expected to see this in the narrative,
them,
but not
the quantity of them that were all in the showcase.
It felt like 10% of the field made the showcase. It was incredible.
Yeah, a wonderful time. And if you are interested in participating in this, you can. Like, this is something you can figure out, you know, what events in your area are qualifiers for it. And if you're interested in doing it, something you should aspire to. If you don't feel like going through the competitive side, there's also the Grand Narrative to participate with. And that is a weekend of immersive gaming, 40K gaming. You get to meet a bunch of cool people, do a bunch of cool things that you will talk about forever, basically. You get to hang out with the best costume in the universe.
How are you going to? Well, so because now you got to go back to back, Red. You got to go back to back.
No, have you started?
He's going to be an NPC next year.
Turning.
Yeah, no. I mean, I got to tell you again, GW really, between the Rogue Trader, Chaos Warlord, and the Big Mech, and then I saw a picture of they had a Cryptek at Warhammer Worlds and that amazing, just amazing cosplay that they had. I'm not sure if I don't know if I really want to go a different direction, like start a new character. I want to add on to what I've got. Like, I think that there's more that I could do, like a power pack for power armor kind of deal with like the big, like inquisitorial eye behind it kind of deal. I think there's adjustments that I can make to the other things I had and how I applied it. There were some little tricks and things that I pulled from folks along the way to make it work. And I think it did work in a lot of ways. I was able to make the armor do what it needed to do across the board in a lot of cases, and it was still convenient and worked out. But there's things I need to continue to address and build on. I could see, I think I mentioned to y'all off show or talking to y'all in another time, like I could make other stuff if I wanted to. But as much as I think, Tanya, you asked me, did I have the itch to keep going with it? And I can't say that I love the project. There's stuff to be done. It is, you know, another part of the hobby. I mean, I showed y'all some of my in-progress work with it, and I went from, like, base coat painting to, like, I applied, like, the real-world adult version of Nuln oil and using, like, a wood stain on top of the plastic armor and things like that. And there's adjustments that can be made and things to do with it. And I'm excited to maybe improve upon it as I continue along the way. But I wasn't going for the award in the first place. I just wanted to make something that contributed to my position, or, you know, as part of the community. And I'll keep focusing on that. I think that's where I just keep going with it. I want to continue to what can I do that helps enhance the event and the community for everybody as a whole. So I look forward to doing that as I go into it.
You're a good bloke, mate.
Yeah, I love the sound of that. That is our show this week. It has been a pleasure hanging out with y'all and talking about Warhammer and all the stuff that we did over the last couple of weeks. Going to try to keep powering through. What do I got working on Hobby Desk? I've got 5 more Death Company I'm working on. My youngest is working on his Necrons, which pretty excited about getting that on the table. I got some. He's using the rule of cool to decide what goes into his army, and that is such a refreshing thing to see and do. It was kind of cool. I, you know, let him pick out some things from the shop there at the narrative. So it was neat having him, you know, actually see everything on the shelf and pick out what he wants and everything. But yeah, it's a journey. It's going to be a cool December. I look forward to sharing this stuff with y'all. Y'all got anything else to add before we wrap this up?
I am tired of building armages.
You can stop whenever you want.
I'm building 10 and I'm 6 in. I've done 6. Fully magnetized. I'm starting a new project. Brand new. I've only ever played Space Marines and Astra Militarum in 40K in a decade. And it's time. It's time to move on. Fresh pastures, fresh projects. Let's do it.
Knights.
Knights.
Tanya, what about you?
I have an RTT this weekend, so getting back into playing events and stuff, managing my expectations because I have not been playing a lot of 40K. I've been helping my buddy prep for LVO for Age of Sigmar, so I've been playing more Age of Sigmar. Just managing my expectations going into this 40K RTT and just wanting to get through my games and have some fun. Continuing to paint Astra Militarum until the end of time.
Can't argue with that. I'll be at PAX Unplugged this weekend in Philly. If anybody's there, stop by and say hello. I would love to give a crisp high five as folks walk by the booth. But I'll see y'all next week, everybody.
See ya.
Boy.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!